former MLB pitcher, and he's an analyst out there with the A's. One of our favorites here is Dallas Braden. What's happening, Dallas?
How we doing, boys? How we doing?
Doing very well.
We're in a bit of a jam right now. I got Houston. He's got the Braves. If you were me, would you flip-flop and switch it up?
I mean, it feels like it'd be a great time to if you were even considering that right now. After what we saw yesterday, the one thing that I think about is the exposing of these bullpens early on. And on the side of the Atlanta Braves, unfortunately, Charlie Morton is not going to be able to bounce back should this thing get extended. And that's where you look at the Astros maybe coming out of that game a little better, aside from the loss that they got hung on them, and thinking Framber might be due for a bounce back again should that series get extended. The one thing about Houston, and we saw Maldonado hit a ball hard last night, but the one thing about Houston is I just don't know that there's a more potent and a more consistent and just really a, as far as a pitcher trying to navigate a more turbulent lineup, 1 through 7, 1 through 8, than the Houston Astros. So as far as like having any fear of whether or not they can come back or look 1-0, if you're the Astros, you probably feel like, look, we're down 0-1. That's all right. We know what we're capable of. We think that we're going to be able to compete. And I don't think that there's any worry for the Houston Astros right now. So if I were you, sit pat. There's still a lot of meat left on this bone.
Yeah, there certainly is. Right. And I look at Altuve, though, man. He is struggling right now. Like, he is struggling, and people are waiting to poke and prod at him. Morton with a broken leg struck him out last night. And he goes 0 for 5. He almost hit into a game-ending double play last night, 3 strikeouts. He is off. Like, do you have any reason to believe he's going to flip the switch here and come alive?
Well, the problem, I guess it's not necessarily a problem. The problem for the pitcher, the problem for the team facing Jose Altuve, is really all it takes is one swing. And that's really, I think, can be said for anybody that's struggling. But Altuve specifically, you're talking about a guy at the top of the lineup who has, much like we saw from Jorge Soler, he has 1-0 power. Meaning the minute you lay one in there, it doesn't matter. The game can change via one swing from Jose Altuve. And I would like to think, and look, being at home, the comfort and the confines of the Crawford boxes being right there in his lap, I made the assessment on our podcast going into the series. I said, just pay attention to Jose Altuve's front foot coming into these first games of this series. Why? Because he is going to be trying to duck hook everything into those Crawford boxes. That's just kind of how he rolls. He can use the other way if he needs to, but for better or worse, Jose Altuve at home is going to pop you and he's going to hurt you pull aside. So I think for Jose Altuve to continue to be a threat, he just got to show up. But as far as producing now, I think maybe there might just be something to allowing the other guys behind you to get big and do the damage, and you get back to using the other way.
With Dallas Braden, Charlie Morton, again, he takes that comebacker off the leg last night and ends up going back out there, pitches with a broken leg. I don't know if it's shilling in the bloody sock type legendary status, but I think it was pretty impressive, the fact that he could grind. And then I guess he was apologizing afterwards that he couldn't go even further. And it didn't matter because the bullpen came up came out and held up beautifully for him and the rest of the Braves. But what is that, as a former pitcher yourself, when you see that, when you hear after the game he's broken his leg and he still went out there, how do you respond to that kind of a story?
Well, it gets you up out of bed and makes you want to run through your bedroom door and get to the gym, doesn't it? I mean, that tells you everything about that man. And really, that tells you everything about the kind of culture, I think, that had been created there. Because Charlie Morton, early on in the year, had talked about a desire to get to spring training early, to make sure that he was sort of, you know, around guys. And that's just kind of how he operates. He wanted to say, you know, I'm not just showing up here, but like, we're a part of this here. Let's do this. And so when you have a guy like that and a leader that he is, the quiet leader that he is, it's very easy to look at Charlie Morton like he's somebody that's invincible. Somebody goes out and does what he does. you're almost not surprised, but at the same time, you step back and just scratch your head. Like, are you serious? Like, people fall down after a sneeze. I know people that have thrown their back out from coughing. And Charlie Morton just wore a 100-plus liner off his fibula, broke his damn leg, and punched two out of the three guys he faced next. Come on.
Dallas, how deflating is it when you're the pitcher, you're getting prepped for the game, it's an extensive warm-up from what I see the guys doing on TV, and the first batter in the World Series goes yard on you? Like, how much does that piss you off and kind of deflate you a little bit?
Well, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily a deflation, per se, because if 1-0 deflates you, well, I don't know that your tire's got enough tread on it.
But it's not obviously anything anybody's looking for. It's got to rattle you a little bit.
I mean, yes and no. You don't want to start anything 1-0, right? Like, and I affectionately referred to those moments in those innings originally as Texas League innings, because you first get to that competitive level in baseball through the minor leagues, it's usually Double-A. And you show up, you know, from the lower level, and you're here in Double-A, and you've thrown 8 or 9 pitches, the score's 4-0, you've got a base runner on, and there's nobody out. You go, what the hell just happened? What just happened? You've hit a guy, a couple doubles, a homer, and you're like, what? I'm 9 pitches into this thing. Well, that's kind of how it felt. But we've been playing this World Series thing, boys, for 117 years. And that's the first time in the history of World Series everdom that there's been a leadoff hitter step up and go, you know what? I think I'll go deep today.
That's crazy.
First time.
That's a crazy stat. When they said that last night, I was like, what? I mean, obviously, it says something about the nature of the position. Back in the day, no one was hitting home runs. It's a bit of a deceptive stat, right? 117 years ago, no one was hitting home runs. Old Haas Radburn was out there throwing heat. No one was hitting home runs off that dude. But this, I mean, to think that Ricky Henderson, you know, someone didn't hit a home run their first at bat in game one of the World Series, it says something about Solari.
Right.
And it says something about, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, who's a friend of the show, and he's a Canadian. He was up here in Toronto. We have him on all the time. And the trade deadline acquisitions, you know, they showed up again last night. Soler, who's DHing, Duvall, obviously, last night. Eddie Rosario has been unbelievable. Jock Peterson's been a stud for
him.
Like, this guy went out, and they mentioned it last night on Fox, and Smoltz was talking it up, and Buck was talking it up, that when Acuna went down, they easily could have packed up shop. And he sent a serious message to that clubhouse that is not going to happen with the acquisitions of these players. And for these guys to come in and perform the way that they're performing, it's just an incredible trade deadline. Like, it's just an unbelievable job by a GM.
No, there's no question about it. And I think it's a great point to state that when Acuna goes down, you could, I don't want to say you could understand, because you hate throwing in the towel, right? Until I'm mathematically done with this thing, I'm coming for the throat, and that's the mentality. So when your GM, when the guy pulling strings says, oh, no, boys, have no fear, almost before you could even get the ink dry on putting Acuna out for the rest of the year, Double A was making moves. Double A is wheeling and dealing. And that's, like, in context, it's different. When you just have somebody making a move for you, kind of waiting things out, let's see how we work out, let's see where we're at. That's different as opposed to being extremely proactive in the pursuit of pieces that can go together, that can fit together to make this thing work. Because what it did, really, is it gave Alex Anthopoulos a great opportunity to flex his brain, and that front office a great opportunity to show what they can do when they start looking for pieces. And I mean, I hate to even question this, but does this Braves team end up where they're at with a healthy Ronald Acuna Jr.? That's a question that I don't think people even care to ask right now or care to answer, and I understand that. But I think it's something you always have to consider when you're talking about the production of those deadline additions, because they've got the most homers out of the deadline additions in the game of baseball. They have literally powered this Braves team through the second half and into the World Series.
You got to win it, though, for the legacy, like for the story, for the cameras to show up and tell the story. You got to win it, and then all of a sudden it's like you're a champion, you're a true winner, you pulled the trigger on it. If you lose, it's just like, yeah, that was the year that he made those trades and it never worked out. It's just like, it's like anything.
Sight of the context of it all.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to get across the finish line.
They do.
I would say that when you're talking about a team who won 88 games and is now in the position they're in, taking on a juggernaut of the American League, and they've done it without some of the big key pieces that they were going to need, like no Soroka early on, Acuna Jr., done. And again, to your point, things could have gone very differently. So just to be here, you know, you got guys like Stephen Vogt in that clubhouse that are showing up every day with probably more desire than anybody in that room to win. And he ain't going to get an AB. And when you have guys like that in that room pulling for you, they're not interested in being, you know, just I'm glad we're here, glad we made it. The Braves are very, very serious about handling business right now against the Houston Astros. And a 1-0 lead has them feeling very confident that they're not going to be just happy to have been to this World Series. They're looking to clear space in a trophy room.
All right, so what do you expect tonight where you got your Urquidy on the mound for the Astros? He throws a ton of strikes, man. He pounds the strike zone up against Max Fried, who the last time we saw him, he got lit up. But he has been a stud here for this team, the Braves. How do you like this pitching matchup, and how do you see Game 2 playing out?
Well, to your point, Urquidy, strike thrower, no doubt. And changeup guy, he's a spin doctor as well. He's got some breaking balls that he features that he's fairly fond of. And I think for the Braves, look, both teams last night, not outstanding with runners in scoring position. If I remember correctly, I believe the Astros were something like 1-for-9. Maybe the Braves were 2-for-9, I think. But Braves got a couple long balls, couple blasts that matter. I think for Jose Urquidy, he just has to allow the defense behind him to do what they do. He's got an outstanding infield. Take notes from what Framber Valdez has done. And the guy, aside from last night and a couple other bumps, I mean, that's a guy, you got the highest ground ball percentage in baseball, and you've got an infield behind you that allows that to work. So if you're taking notes from that, you just go ahead and let that defense work. You continue to fill up the strike zone. Don't try to do anything more than you need to. On the other side of things, for Max Fried, we've talked about Max Fried potentially becoming one of the big game pitchers in the game of baseball. This game tonight would be you want to talk about a pinnacle outing for him? This is the most important outing in Max Fried's career, and I think that's easily said, easily acknowledged. But with his stuff, what we've seen Max Fried capable of, this dude can, if he's on, if he's spinning that bender and that heater up top is working, it could be a long, long day. Long day for this Houston Astros team. Problem is, Houston Astros got about the least amount of swing and miss in baseball. So they can see strikes, they can hit strikes, they can separate balls from strikes. So Max Fried is going to have to be on it from pitch one. And when I say pitch one, the best pitch in baseball is strike one. So that's what Max Fried needs to do, is get ahead of these dudes early, force the action. Should he see this aggressive lineup in Houston start to ambush him early on, break out the bender, start working backwards a little earlier than you thought you might have wanted to. If that makes you uncomfortable, get comfortable being uncomfortable. We need you, big dog.
Well, can't wait for it. It's going to be a fun one tonight. Dallas, we always appreciate you taking time for us, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Anytime, boys. Enjoy game two.
You got it. You too. There he is, Dallas Braden, longtime MLB pitcher and NBCS California analyst, and game two of the World Series going tonight.